Hello, everybody, and welcome to our fifth class in our Avas Chinam series. Okay, we have a lot to accomplish today because I would like to deal with the positive aspects still of giving the free-flowing love. But we also have to deal with the overcoming negativity. And I think I mentioned at some point that this midah has like a storm meira and an ase tov aspect. And the ase tov is what we've been talking about, which is giving the love, the unconditional love. But the storm meira is overcoming the negativity that's blocking me from being free loving, having free flowing love. So today I'd like to really touch upon both. I'd like to start with a question that I received, an email that I received. A woman is describing a child, a six-year-old child, who seems to always be asking, and she thinks that the child is maybe even spoiled and getting too much, and how does this unsolicited, unconditional love work for a child like that? So I would like to say, I think we've kind of touched upon this, that the never-ending need is often some kind of sign of some kind of developmental hole. And not that we always know where that hole is coming from, and this could have to do with a chomer of a child, but sometimes there's like this this basic need for nurturance that was not filled, that must be filled, and the person is going about getting it in the wrong kind of a way. They kind of think that they're going to get pleasure by more treats and more candies and more gifts, and this is really causing them to, it's like one of these situations where the more they get, the more they still are not filling that hole, and that's often the source of the never-ending needs. Sometimes there's a certain kind of a pattern of narcissism which I don't know if I spoke about in this series, but often the narcissism is, I think we did speak about it actually, the narcissism could be based in a child getting too little input when they were at a very basic stage of their development. It could be based in getting too much input and then not being able to move on. I think we did speak about this at some point. But basically, I often assume when I see children like this that for whatever reason there's a developmental hole where they're still almost at that infantile stage of just needing to be completely nurtured and using other people's objects to get their needs met. And I do believe that people like this, in order to overcome their hole, children like this, they need a few different things. First of all, we said like that the unsolicited giving fills a place. And it could be that maybe if this person was offered more, I know that sounds very counterintuitive, but very often people who know how to work, let's say, for example, with the overweight child who wants to always eat, when you tell them that they can't have more, that's often when they kind of are sneaking and looking for things, to eat. But when you kind of offer the child food, it kind of sometimes reverses that need to just kind of get. But that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to try to open new pleasure centers in the brain, because clearly the one of treats and things like that is not filling the place on a deep level. And then maybe it could be something like finding that child some kind of activity to do that they really enjoy, preferably like a high-level pleasure, like giving to others. And I find that when kids like this, like volunteer, or they take care of somebody with special needs or something like that, they often find that fills their, it's a much higher level pleasure, and it often fills them up in a way that the very simple pleasures are not filling them up. So I think even a child that age could maybe needs to develop new associations with pleasure, and not to be denied the pleasure that he's asking, but to supply new types of pleasures of mastering his environment, of maybe sometimes intellectual pleasure of learning, and definitely the pleasure of giving, and to see if that maybe helps reduce the constant need for more and more treats and more things. Okay, that's a regular ahas, as they say. It's only like a partial answer, but I hope that helps. Okay, if we get back to our material, we were talking about the static in the giving communication. And we have been speaking about the fact that sometimes when I think I'm trying to give to somebody and give them a loving feeling and they're not receiving it, there's all kinds of reasons why. And we had said that one of the reasons is because maybe I'm not really communicating love. Maybe I'm communicating obligation or fear or guilt and not love. That was the first place we spoke about having our focus on our intentionality in the way we give. The second thing we spoke about, which was last week, was about the person realizing that they're being given to. And we said, the Gemara says that this person is supposed to tell somebody if they're doing for them, because the person is not a prophet and doesn't necessarily know they're being given to. And we also spoke about the avas chinam of the unsolicited giving as being something very, very important. And the unconditional love as being the one that really, really builds the self-esteem of the child, or the adult, actually. Okay, I'd like to now get to the third reason why sometimes we're showing somebody love, but they seem to not be understanding that, and that is the concept of the five love languages. And I always kind of have a methodological question about how much time to spend on the love languages, because I don't, I'm never sure who's heard them and who hasn't heard them. So, you know, this is coming from a very, very famous book, which has sold millions of copies, called The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman. That's Chapman. So I'm already apologizing to those of you who know this this book and have read it. And for those of you who haven't, this will be a chiddush to you. So basically, Gary Chapman's theory is that he's a clergy, you know, counselor who deals with couples for many, many years, and he finds that often there are two people who love each other very much, and yet they're not communicating the love to each other properly. And when he did his research, he found that there's basically five different love languages, which means that there's five ways that people like to give and receive love. And often what happens is that between two people, they both love each other, but they communicate in different languages. So if I'm trying to tell you that I love you in Yiddish and you only understand Chinese, then you're not getting the message. And Gary Chapman tries to explain that in order to really be able to give to somebody and love them freely, and I'm throwing in the word freely, but that's because that's our topic, you may have to try to understand what language this person needs to be communicated to in, meaning how am I going to show them that I love them in a way that they like and they understand. And a lot of miscommunication in relationships or a lot of feeling of lack of fulfillment or maybe a certain kind of not feeling nurtured comes from a person just not understanding the love language of the other person. So just to give you an example, well, actually, I'm going to say over the five love languages first, and then we'll go into examples. But his research, Gary Chapman's research, came up with five basic love languages with the assumption that every person has a predominant one or two that they feel most nurtured when they're given to in this way, and that's when they really feel loved. His theory is that we give and take in the same language. I don't think it's always true. So whether you're the person receiving the love or giving the love, you have to think about which love language you're using. So the five languages are basically, number one, I'm going to talk about the first two are very female, feminine ones. Number one is words of affirmation. And these are the people who feel most loved when you give them a compliment or when you write them a beautiful card and you're describing what's special about them. And this is what makes them feel loved. So if you are trying to give avas chinam to a words of affirmation person, you would really put a lot of effort into thinking, what am I going to say to them that's going to make them feel special and loved? Because their main communication is words. And these are the kind of people who, when you give them a gift and you write a beautiful card with it, they kind of like don't even, they barely look at the gift, and the card is what stays with them for many, many years. And they savor every word when you say something nice to them and your compliments are so meaningful to them. And that's like a very, as you could say, it's like very predominantly feminine, although there's some men who are like this too. And that's one of the love languages. Okay, love language number two is quality time, also a pretty female one. And this is the kind of person who, if you really want to make them feel loved, you should shut off your phone and shut off all your gadgets and not be distracted and completely focus on them. And when you give them quality time, they feel so nurtured and so loved. So if you're trying to work on Ava with a person who's like that, you're really going to think about where and what can I do with them to give them my undivided attention. And that's called quality time. And for some people, this is the thing that makes them feel most loved. Even more than compliments is the fact that you, once they were alone with me and you were only focused on me and nobody else. And that's the concept of quality time. Number three, maybe a little less common, is gifts. These are people who, if you want to communicate love to them, you have to do it in a very tangible way. They need to see something and put it in front of them and say, "Ah, you see, this person loves me." And these are the people who love to receive flowers, and they love the piece of jewelry, because when they look at it, they say, "Ah, I was nurtured by this person. They bought me this item." And these are the people who are maybe a little more sensory, a little more visual, and they need to see something. Like every time they look at that gift or those beautiful flowers on the table, or they look at that piece of jewelry, they're thinking, "Ah, this person really, really loves me." So for them, gifts are more important than anything else. Number four, physical touch. And there's some people for whom a hug or a soft touch is going to make them feel most nurtured. And I think we all know, you know, anybody who has a few children knows that there's certain children who very much like physical touch, others who really don't. And for some people, this is their main love language. Like, being touched is what makes them feel loved. Number five is the love language that I think is the most misunderstood of the love languages. And this Gary Chapman calls acts of service. Acts of service means that for some people, washing the dishes for you is the way that they show you that they love you. And if you're an acts of service person yourself, and you're trying to nurture somebody else, you may not think about the time and the words and the physical touch, but you may be willing to go to the other end of the world to do an errand for this person, or you may be willing to stay up and iron their clothing at 3 a.m, and that's the way you express love. And if you're dealing with an acts of service person, you have to think, what kind of service can I do for this person that will express to them how much I love them? Okay, so these are the five languages: the words, the quality time, the gifts, the physical touch, and the acts of service. Now, what happens in many relationships, especially in marriage relationships, is that often, almost by definition, people choose to marry people who have different love languages than them. And we could talk about why that is. We can say that al pi ruchnius, it's a lot about expansion, about kind of being a wider person, and therefore Hashem kind of propels me towards somebody who's going to develop an aspect of me that's not so developed already, and that's why people often end up marrying somebody who has a different love language. And I once heard Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz from Yerushalayim talk about this topic. I think he called it a moderate challenge, meaning when you're looking for who to marry, marriage is about growth and achieving your completion. So when you marry somebody who has exactly the same personality traits as you, it's not really very challenging because, you know, you might be a quiet, not communicative person, and so are they, so you can both sit at the table and read your books and nobody's bothered by it. So that's a marriage without a challenge for growth. A moderate challenge is when the person needs something of you that's not, doesn't come natural, or in Gary Chapman's language, it would be if somebody has a different love language than you. So I need to kind of learn their language. And here we're going to get to the steps of the loving, communicating, and receiving love in terms of the five love languages require a few things. It requires you to be aware of the person who you would like to give to to be aware of their love language in order to be able to nurture them in a way that's going to hit most, hit them most in a you know, kind of, wow, I'm being loved right now. And even though many people can receive in many different languages, if you're really, really trying to communicate Ava to somebody, it would really be helpful if you understood their love language and communicated in that language, because then it penetrates more. It's a language they understand. So that's the first step, is learning the love language of the person who you're trying to give to. The next part is learning how to translate well when people give to you. And if I am a words person and I'm in a relationship with somebody who is a gifts person, then they may bring me flowers all the time, but I'm just craving a card that they never write. And then, in that context, the emotionally healthy thing to do would be to know how to translate the other person's love language into yours. So you look at those roses sitting on the table and you say, these roses are telling me, the person's trying to tell me, how much they love me and how much they care about me. And you kind of fill in the words because that's your love language, but the person gave you a gift and you knew how to translate gifts into words. Okay, so we want to learn how to focus on other people's love languages. We want to learn how to receive well and to be able to give in ways that people can appreciate. What I just said right now is a very, very oversimplification of Gary Chapman's book. But one of the interesting things that I noticed is that within the same family, you can have so many different love languages. And I once played this game with my children around the Shabbos table. I asked them to each tell me, like, what makes them feel most loved. And it was amazing to see that everybody had something else to say. Some people loved the words, the compliments. Somebody loved the quality time alone. Somebody else liked the gifts. And I like to say, you know, any child under the age of 4 is going to tell you that their love language is gifts, because they really want the fire engine in the toy store that they keep seeing. So that's not necessarily accurate, but at that age, that's kind of what's on their mind. Some people are definitely physical touch people. And then we have the people who are acts of service people. And I like to say that when you're communicating love to somebody, you have to think that the chinam part, see, it's tricky, because in order for it to be chinam, free-flowing from me, it's easier for me to give in my own love language, because that flows more freely. And yet if I really want to make you feel loved, part of the chinam is going to be that, you know, I want to give to you in a way that you can receive well and that you're interested in. And that becomes part of the chinam here, is I'm willing to learn your language in order to make you feel good. So I think that as part of the Avas Chinam exercise, I think we have to take this circle one person who we've chosen, who would not have made it to circle two, and we have to think, is there some form of love that person likes to be communicated to? Is this a words person? Is this a quality time person? Is this a tangible gifts person? Is this a physical touch person? Is this a acts of service person? And once I could kind of like pick up the cues from them as to what makes them feel good, then, or maybe I even really know already, then I can kind of try to give them more in their language in order to really affect them and make them realize how much I care about them. I want to make two little statements about Gary Chapman's book. I often deal with the topic of the love languages when I'm talking about Shalom Bayis, and I think I even did do it in my Shalom Bayis teleconference series. And often in live groups, I also will speak about this concept for people who are married or dating and, you know, want to get married, about understanding the love languages. And even though it's really about more like a marriage relationship, I almost always have somebody who, after they learn the love languages, they raise their hand and they say to me, oh, now I know that my mother really loves me after all. And it's always so sad for me to hear this, but I've heard it enough times to realize that children whose parents have a very different love language than them may sometimes grow up feeling not so loved. And it's such a generational thing. It's so true that so many children today are growing up in a world, an open world of validation and compliments and physical touch and all these. This is their world. This is what makes them feel nurtured. And a child like that just wants to be hugged, or they want to be complimented, or they want quality time. Now, if the child has a parent from an earlier generation, a lot of those generations were not so into words and were not so into hugs. They were, if you look at it culturally as a post-Holocaust generation, many of them were very, very emotionally unavailable because of everything that they'd gone through that was so intense for them. And therefore, a lot of the transmitted messages about love are through things and not through words or even physical touch. And, you know, you imagine this Yiddish mama who's willing to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning to iron her child's underwear, but she may have never said to her child, I love you, or maybe never given him a hug or never taken him out to spend time by himself. And the child may be stuck in a place where he feels very, very unloved, but really the parent does love him very much, just expresses it in a different love language. So very often some woman of some age group, and sometimes it could be that the woman herself, the child in the story, is already 50, 60 years old, but they'll say to me, oh, now I know that my mother really did love me. And I always think it's so sad, but for the little child who desperately needs a hug or a compliment and never, ever, ever gets it, because that's just not the mother's style, does not realize that when she stays up so late, you know, getting his clothing or whatever, that's the mother communicating, I love you. But for them, if it's not their language, then the acts of service are kind of go unappreciated. So that's like a big point that often comes up, is that people realize so they suffered so much in their youth by feeling unloved, and they didn't realize that a lot of the technical acts of service that their mothers were doing were a sign of tremendous love. So that's one thing that comes up. And the other thing that I'd like to say is that this shita can take a good relationship and make it even better. Because a lot of us, because we're balanced, we can see ourselves in all those love languages, or at least most of them. And I think this about all the different shitot that take personality types or give numbers, you know, or, you know, the whole Myers-Briggs system of introvert, extrovert, intuitive versus thinking, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that when people start reading these like different personality type books and things like that, they often expect to see themselves very, very strongly in one category. And they're even sometimes disappointed if it's not clear to them which category they're in. And I like to say that a balanced person, it's good that he doesn't necessarily know if he's an introvert or an extrovert, because maybe he's on the line between them. Maybe he can go to an event and have a good time, but he also happens to love staying home and reading a book. And he really is both. So a lot of the types, we put people in categories and we say, oh, this is an intuitive type, or this is a sensory type. We're kind of giving a brand. We're kind of assuming that we're giving something kind of intense to something that might really be more subtle. And I always say to people, when you read these books and you say, ooh, I don't really know, am I an I or an E? Am I introvert or extrovert? If you don't know because you enjoy being together with people and being separate, that's great. You don't have to limit yourself to one choice. And I think the same thing is true when we talk about the love languages. The person who recognizes himself as only having one love language and hates when, you know, love is communicated in any other language, that's rare. Most of us are a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and we have one predominant love language where we really enjoy the most, but it's not that we are incapable of the other ones. So even though I'm going to ask you to choose your love language, it doesn't mean that you don't enjoy being given to in others. And that's important to keep in mind. Okay. Therefore, you will try to recognize yourself, but more importantly, to try to recognize the person who you want to give free-flowing love to. And to try to understand, is there some way that I can make this person feel good on their turf, in their language? And then I begin to go about trying to figure out what language they speak and to try to think about how am I going to give to them their way. Okay. The next point that I wanted to make is that when I said that a good marriage can become better, it's so fascinating how people's histories also tend to kind of formulate a lot of the way they view love, and even their major love language is shaped somewhat by their earlier life experiences. And I'll give you an example to this. I don't mind giving a personal example of me and my husband. I read this book, Gary Chapman's book, maybe when I was married around 20 years, maybe a little less. And it was interesting to me because, Baruch Hashem, me and my husband get along very nicely, but I never really would have thought that of his love language and thought about how to give to him in his love language. So I realized that even though I was giving with all five, there was a specific point that I could have worked on more. And I when I said that it's like culturally, or there's like it's a transmitted thing from people's families. When you first talk to somebody about their love language, they might not even understand why they have that language. And sometimes they'll never understand. But for some people, it's very clear why they have it, because it has something to do with where they're coming from. And just to show you how history affects things, so my husband has a stay-at-home mother who, for the majority of her married life, the vast majority, she did not have to work. And she put a lot of effort into physical details. And Ada Yom Hazeh, if you go to her house for breakfast, she gives you this beautiful omelet on a plate with all the tomatoes spread out so beautifully and the sprouts all around, and everything looks so nice. So her main love language is acts of service. And she was not, particularly very verbal or anything like that, but that was a particularly a way. So my husband associated, and I never realized this until I read the book, to him, a finely cut salad or a beautifully laid out plate is a sign of love. Now, where I'm coming from, both my parents are doctorates, and when I was little, they were doctoral students writing their dissertations. And we always ate healthy, normal food, but it was kind of easy. It wasn't food that took hours and hours to make because my parents were very busy writing their doctorate at that point. So this idea of like a very, very, very finely cut salad that takes a long time to cut is something that you'd be more likely to find in my mother-in-law's house than in my mother's house. Now, when I got married and I used to kind of like cut up a salad, so I was also a working mother and, busy. And to me, the nutritional value of a cucumber is the same whether you chop it to tiny, tiny pieces or if you leave it in bigger pieces. So to me, I did not realize that cutting your vegetables a certain way could be an act of love. And because my family were doctoral students, a lot of the things that were, there were a lot of words being used. So I might have become a words of affirmation person where I would really like the compliments or the description of what I did right, but I'm married to somebody whose acts of service might be his language. And to him, a finely cut up salad means a lot about how much you care. Now, only when you learn the system and when you go into the history a little bit, you understand, like, wow, I never realized that when I cut that up very, very small or the way you like it, or I'm showing you that I'm nurturing you. I'm showing you that I care. and I'm communicating love to you because that's your love language. So I think that that's a pretty common, what I just described now, is a pretty common constellation of, let's say, women who are more like words and quality time people, married to men who are more active service people, and the two have to learn how to communicate in each other's language and to appreciate each other's language. But if we get back to Avas Chinam, I think that part of the Avas Chinam is trying to communicate to people in languages that they understand. Because I'm not just doing this to be Yotze, oh, okay, I tried a law of Israel, okay, now I'm free. But rather, like, we really believe that on a deep level, we want to communicate to this person how we feel to them. And if we're not talking the right language, it doesn't come through as well. So therefore, knowing the five love languages and trying to figure out the other person's love language is a very big part of Avas Chinam. You can look for cues. Sometimes you could ask the person straight out, but sometimes you can look for cues. And Gary Chapman says that one of the best cues is the way the person actually likes to nurture others is often the way he would like to be nurtured himself. So that's something to think about. Okay, so I think we kind of reached the end of understanding how to communicate love. And, you know, this idea of learning somebody else's language, it's very important. I want to say one last point. I keep remembering different points about the love languages, is that when you teach somebody a new language, and this is if the person wants to nurture you, right, and they want to learn your language, it might seem like a cop-out to tell a person, okay, could you please write me a card, or these are the kind of words I'd like to hear, or I really would like you to really compliment me. It seems like, oh, gosh, if I have to, like, kind of write out the adjectives, so then this is not a good... This is not a good thing. The person's supposed to know. But we just define that if it's not the person's love language, they often really don't know. You can't teach somebody Chinese without teaching them, you know, all the aspects of it. And that is really, really important to understand, that that sometimes I might have to spell out a little bit what I need, and it seems like a cheat. Like, if you love me, you'd know what to say to me. But since people speak different love languages, they often don't really know. So we have to also be willing to ask people about their love languages and learn. You might not want to ask them directly, but you want to, like, watch them enough to perceive, oh, what is it that makes them feel special? Which one of the languages? And how am I going to go about giving to them that way? So that's the ultimate, you know, Ava, Lasher Yitin Yohav, as Rav Dessler says, you love somebody, but if you give to them. And then this book is giving you five different ways of giving that are, you know, the basic human needs. Okay, let's go a little bit further. And what I want to talk about right now is the other side of the coin, meaning, I wrote here like a list of examples and I didn't get to it. You know, there might be an old lady, and especially if this is going to be circle three people, because, you know, we're always talking about working on circle one, but circle three is also important to work on when you see somebody who you don't know so well and you try to figure out their love language. So, you know, the old lady who likes physical touch might really just need a hug from you, and that will make her feel amazing. It'll make her feel so loved by you. So the person who's an active service person, you might want to call them and say to them, you know what I want to do for you this week? I want to give you 2 hours, and I'm going to drive you around and take you anywhere you need to go. Or, do you want to go take a nap, and I'll go do the dishes? Or noticing that they need something and buying it for them. That's the way you show an active service person. For the person who is a quality time person, if you want to show them Avas Chinam, call them up and ask them if they want to go out for coffee with you. Because to them, to say, wow, you're going to spend, you know, an hour or two just on me, we're going to sit in a coffee shop together, just the two of us, they're a quality time person, and that's what's going to make them feel tremendous, that you really are showing them Avas Chinam when you offer them quality time alone. And it doesn't only have to be in a coffee shop. It could be, you know, asking somebody if they want to go for a walk or showing up for a visit. for a quality time person, this is a sign that they feel very loved. For the person who is a words person, and a lot of women are, if you want to show off a schinam, think about what you can compliment about them and use the words that you think are most descriptive of them and let them feel very special and what you think is special about them. So these people are dying for the card or the little post-it note that says, this is how you're going to give to me. And I think that for people who are words of validation people, a little post-it note on the fridge with a compliment and a smiley face and a beautiful message on their machine, these are the things that make them feel most loved. For somebody who's a gifts person, when you come and you say, you know, I was in this store and I saw this orange bowl and I know that you love orange, and you buy them something for their house or something nice that they can hang up or something that you could put in a central place. For these people, that makes them feel very, very good. To have something tangible in their house, that's a sign of how much you care about them. And, you know, it's funny that I'm saying this right now because today is Erev Rosh Chodesh. Tonight is actually Rosh Chodesh. And my boys who are in school in Yerushalayim, we try to give the teachers, the Rebbeim, gifts at the end of the year, a thank you gift. And we try to do it before Rosh Chodesh Av because in the 9 days it's better not to give gifts. Definitely some posts can say it's okay, but some posts can say it's better not to. So we try to give the end of the year gifts for the Rebbe before Rosh Chodesh. So that was today. So today was my big run around the day, making sure that everybody, that my children were able to give their Rebbeim what they wanted to give them. And often when I go to like some kind of silver store or something to pick out a present, I think about the fact that I would love this Rebbe to have something to sit on his Shabbos table or sit in a central place to remind him that his students really loved him. And that's why more often than not, I'll choose a gift for a Shabbos table, like little shot glasses or a basket for challah or something, because I want this person to have an excuse to see something in front of him, hopefully once a week, that tells him how much he's cared about. And these are the people who are gifts people, because they can't wait to have something that they can look at to show them that you care. Okay, so I think I just gave examples of all the five love languages, and really what we're adding right now is that your Avas Chinam project is that not only did you pick a person who's level one and you want to treat them like level two, but you also want to think about what their love language might be and think about how am I going to communicate love to such a person, meaning what, once I know what their love language is, how can I use it to get it across to them? And this is very, very important. So the level one person is in your life, you might really know. And the level three person is a stranger who maybe you want to kind of pick up cues a little bit from them about what it is that makes them feel nurtured. And this is a very powerful exercise. To nurture somebody in their language is such a nice added gesture. Like that's part of the chinam thing. This relationship is not going to just be on my terms, my language, my convenience, but rather, okay, I could do this on your terms a little bit also. And, okay. So that's basically it for the love languages. And like I said, balance people like all five of them. People who give in all five, that's great. But if you feel there's a very strong imbalance, then there's room for improvement. Okay. So that's about the love languages. Now, we're going to have to wind down, and I keep trying to get to this Sormira part, and it's not really working. So I'm going to introduce a certain idea right now, which I think we have time for, and we're going to extrapolate on it next week. I hope I did not say this, because I don't have it in my notes that I said it. I might have stuck it in somewhere. I hope not. But the theory has it that when you are not experiencing avas chinam towards somebody, there's something blocking you. And we all know that we're capable of being loving in our level two relationships. And yet in our level one, there's often something blocking. Now, if what's blocking is something that you have no knowledge of why that is, then I'm trying to think how to explain this. Sometimes there's a lack of chemistry in a relationship, and you can't put your finger on it, but I just do not flow with this person. I don't know why. That's some of the time. But right now what I would like to introduce is that sometimes if you think about it a little bit, you start noticing that there must be certain personality traits that this person has that make it hard for me to be free-flowing towards them. And you start noticing, you know, that there's a fault or there's something negative about the person that has stopped me from treating them like a level two person up till now. In fact, there's been some stress around the issue. And I'd like to be able to remove that issue in order to really love them freely. Okay. So now we're talking about removing obstacles. And the obstacle is whatever trait you're having a difficult time with. Okay, so let's explain this a little bit. The Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Ayin, the Gemara says, Kol ha-posel b'mumo posel. Anybody who negates and criticizes somebody else has something negative in himself. So the first thing that the Gemara is trying to tell me is that could it possibly be that the thing that's bothering you so much about this level one person that's not letting you move on is that they're too similar to you? Meaning, could it be that I have a certain personality trait that I don't like so much in myself? And then when I see it in somebody else, it really upsets me. Especially if you're a mother and your level one person is a child, this is very, very, very common. That the thing that bothers me most about the child is the thing that I don't like in myself. I'm worried that he's going to end up like me. In psychology, they call this projection, where I'm not comfortable admitting that I have a certain flaw, so I kind of notice it in you and project it onto you, and then I don't like it in you. And the English expression that kind of fits with kol ha-posel b'mumo posel, which is what we just said, the more colloquial expression, but we say it takes one to know one, which means that because I'm familiar with this negative trait, when I see it in somebody else, it really, really bothers me. And that's a minority of people, but there are some people who will admit to you that the thing that bothers them in other people is very, very similar to a certain personality flaw that they have. Okay, so that's the Gemara. Kol ha-posel b'mumo posel. That if somebody negates somebody else, it could be that it's because of their own negativity or their own problem or their own fault that they're seeing in somebody else. But then the Gemara goes on to say, kol ha-posel pasul, which is a much more umbrella concept. The Gemara is saying, anybody who negates and criticizes other people has a problem himself. Kol ha-posel pasul. Anybody who passels, anybody who negates other people, pasul, he himself is negative. Something's wrong with him. And here we're just going to divide into two categories, and we're going to deal with this more next week. That kol ha-posel b'mumo pasul means that the reason why this is bothering you is that I share this negative quality with you. Kol ha-posel pasul usually means that there's a completely different reason, and it might even be the opposite reason. It might be that I am actually very good at something, and it bothers me that you're not. Meaning, let's say I'm naturally organized, and messy people bother me. Then that's not coming from kol ha-posel b'mumo-posel. It's not the fact that I'm a mess, and you're a mess, and I don't like your mess. It's rather that I'm so organized that I cannot understand people who are so messy. And that's why it's on my mind. But the Gemara is telling you that even that, and we're going to get much more into this next week, kol ha-pasul pasul, meaning why am I obsessing over your faults? It doesn't matter what my reasoning is, I should not be obsessing over your faults. And we're going to get to that more next week, because it's clearly leading into the removing the bad. But for homework now, I would like to go back to the five love languages and ask people to take their level one person who they're working on a better relationship with and ask themselves, what language does this person really like to be given in? What nurtures them and feels good the most for them? And I think that that's really the homework. The homework is you can look for the love languages in other relationships. You can look for the love languages all over. But specifically, in order to have avas chinam, we want to take the difficult people in our lives and we want to be able to understand their love language. We want to be able to give to them in their love language. Okay, so that really is the homework. Looking to use the love languages, get to know yourself better, get to know your family better. But more specifically, give love to the person who is your level one person and figure out what makes them feel most nurtured and loved, which one of the five love languages, and then start using it. Okay, I would like to leave room for questions, if there are any questions.
Press star 6 if you have a question. And no questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. And next week, we're going to go deeper into the removing the obstacles and overcoming the negativity. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Bye-bye.